Welcome to the Scottish Watches podcast. Oh, we've got a bumper edition for you today. We've got an exclusive, we've got a guest you haven't heard from in real life before, and we have a returning favourite guest that you've heard from many, many times before. We're going across the Atlantic, we're going down south, we're going all over the world in this edition of the Scottish Watches podcast, and I would like to welcome to the show, well, first of all, Nick from Fears. And Nick can do the duties of introducing our second guest.
Well, thank you very much, Ricky. It's great to be back on. And I was thinking when we were about to sit down and record this, is this my fifth, sixth, seventh time? I feel like, yeah, I've been very honored to be on for a lot of episodes. But yeah, it's still, as always, great to be back. So thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. Now, who else do we have here?
Well, so if I can, I was going to say, you know, if we'd been doing this, you know, several years ago, I'd say, oh, you know, this gentleman I met the other side of the world. But I think now I'm very proud to say has become a good friend of mine, as well as someone who I'm been proud to say I'm doing business with. I'd like to introduce you to Rob from California, Rob Kaplan of Topper Jewelers.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on the show. Big checkmark of life goals reached. I'm honored to be in the number one podcast in the UK. So it's a thrill to be on Scottish Watches. So thank you so much for having me. If you aren't familiar with me, my brother and I, Russ, we run Topper Jewelers in Burlingame, California, which is a very watch-focused store in the middle of Silicon Valley in a little town called Burlingame.
Well, if anybody has been listening to our show for a number of years, you'll have heard us speak about Toppers in the past. They released an edition with Oris a number of years ago. We've had Catelyn and Kat from the 10 and 2 podcast on numerous times. We've collaborated with them over the years. They speak highly of Rob and the team at Toppers, so it is a name from the past, but we haven't really spoken recently because you guys have been super, super busy. So have we across here. We've not been able to travel. It's just been a bit of a mess. We all know what's been happening in the last couple of years. But to start off with, congratulations, because I hear you guys are moving on to bigger and better things.
That's true. So it's certainly an exciting time for Nick Fears, who's, as you know, opening up his dream workshop in Bristol. But it's an exciting time for us as well, because we are moving to a store that's right across the street. That is a former Gap and a Kids Gap that's about 3.5 times the size of the existing Topper. And I feel like we're finally going to have a physical space that sort of will match people's expectations of, you know, when they've heard of us, they've heard about our Topper editions, and they think of us and they think about the events that we host, that's really commensurate with the space. I mean, our existing store is nice, but it is relatively small. This new store is really exciting. It's going to have one of the only private Omega boutiques in the country. It's going to have a large Breitling lounge. It's going to have a Grand Seiko salon, a host of areas of the independents we feature that I know you like talking about on your show, from Chopik and Moser and Parmigiani. And it's also going to have nice shop and shops from Seiko and G-Shock and Oris, just to name a few. Collector's corner for Blancpain and Glasutta Original. So it's really going to be a store that is sort of just for people that love watches, whether they're $200 or really exclusive small handmade pieces. And we're really excited to open this space. And we'd love to have you guys come visit us when we get running and get all the red tape cleared.
I think we invented red tape. We were one of the last nations on the planet to allow our citizens to roam mask-free once vaccinated. We only actually got rid of our masks about 2 months ago there, potentially even less time. But no, congratulations. It's brilliant to hear. There is a lot of expansion with the independents over here in the UK, especially in Scotland, and it's good to hear that this is echoed across the waters over in America. Now, for the listeners that maybe can't remember, the last time we obviously spoke about you guys and we're talking about your limited edition release, can you give me the history of Toppers, where it came from and how it's grown, and the brands that you guys deal with, apart from the ones that you mentioned towards the end there?
So Topper started in Modesto, Merced, and it was founded by two brothers called the Topper Brothers. And when you think about what Modesto Merced is like. It's in an area of California, Central California, called the San Joaquin Valley. And the most famous, like, cinematic part, you know, depiction of it is probably the movie American Graffiti, Francis Ford Coppola's first movie. It takes place in Modesto, and it's very much of a small, hardworking town. You know, people would drag race down the main street in the 50s and 60s. You know, it's like a movie that's in, like, everyone who goes to film school sees that movie. You know, we were very much like, we had a downtown store. The Topper Brothers sold it to my great uncle. And then my great uncle sold it to my grandfather. And my grandfather sold it to my father. And then my brother and I went to work with my father. My brother started in the 80s and I started around the year 2000. But over time, we opened up a store in our hometown in the early 90s. And then the whole Central Valley, like, you know, sort of Americana part of Topper, that was a very low-end store, you know, relative to what it is now. That part of the business all went away by about the year 2000. And the San Joaquin Valley part of Topper in Modesto and Merced, we ended up closing those stores and really focusing on a more high-end experience in the town that Russ and I grew up in, which is Burlingame. And we got certainly lucky because around Burlingame, that sort of the tech world sprouted up. So companies like Oracle and Facebook and Google are all of their headquarters are within 15 minutes of the town that Russ and I grew up in. We love watches. Watches have always been the reason I wanted to go into the business. And starting around the year 2015, when we had the 75th anniversary of the store, we designed a few limited editions, one with Bermont and one with Nomos, to celebrate the 75th anniversary of the store. And, you know, that could have been the only limiteds we did if they weren't popular, but, you know, we sold them out. And then I would say that the next watch we did, which was the first Oris, the Diver 65 Topper Edition in 2016, that was probably the most important watch we ever did because we stopped doing watches that were about us or about an anniversary of us. The watch was really just the best watch that we thought we could make for enthusiasts, where we looked at an existing Diver 65 and we thought, what would our customer base or just watch collectors in general really enjoy? And, you know, can we get a watch company to make something a little different? That was really, I think, the start of Topper Editions. And so we've come out with one every year.
Okay, well, I'll stop you there and I'll ask about that first Oris. Tell us what was special about it, what was different.
The most important thing about it was the first modern Oris dive watch that was a non-date. We played with the type font in the text, where we made the Oris logo a lot closer to the original font of the way it says Oris. It looks a lot closer to how it was on the original 60s Diver 65. We moved, like, where Swiss Made was on the dial to make it look more symmetrical. That 12936, when we looked at that watch, we're like, this could be like an iconic shape, almost like the symmetry of an explorer if you removed the date. And so once the 3 and the 9 are symmetrical, then the 12 and the 6 are symmetrical, and the whole thing just looks so balanced. And then we did a bunch of other things. So we sort of played with fade a little bit, which in 2016 was maybe a little bit more novel than it is now. So, like, we put a red tip at the second hand, which reminded us of some of our favorite Omegas from, like, the 90s and 2000s and the way that they would age. But we also made it like a light orange instead of, you know, a popping red. And then the bezel was faded. The bezel pip was also orange instead of white, also faded a little bit. So we put the jewel count on the dial instead of the water resistance, because we figured anybody who was going to be buying a custom limited from us knew it was 100-meter water resistant watch. And, you know, the back would certainly be enough. And a little foreshadowing, you'll see that we play around a little bit with the whole idea of what we put and how we emotionally convey water resistance on this watch that we'll be talking about later today, which I think you'll find interesting.
Foreshadowing, I like it. Good.
A little foreshadowing. But over the years, we've developed sort of a little bit of a design language in our limiteds based on feedback that we've received just from selling watches over the years. And that original Diver 65, that was our fastest sellout. It sold out even faster than the first two. We just love working on watches and being able to custom design things and then just watch the reaction. Nick and I were talking about that earlier, last night, which I think was his this morning. There's no feeling that is more alive or more raw or more anything than releasing a watch, doing your best on it, and then just watching the comments and watching the total unfiltered reaction and just seeing what happens. That is, to me, like the most alive feeling that there is in this industry, is just sharing a release with media and public. I mean, it's so exciting.
I can totally get what you mean. We are working on something ourselves that is pretty much sold out, and it's a collaboration with Christopher Ward, a brand we speak about a lot here in the UK, a brand that Nick is very familiar with because he kind of put the wheels in motion to connect us both. I mean, we got emails through from our listeners saying they're looking forward to it. Is there any possibility if one becomes available? We know it's almost sold out. Could you please, please, please let us know? It's a good feeling because you know you've done something right. And this is even before anybody gets the watch and the wrist. So that is brilliant. But Nick, I'm actually quite disappointed in you. How many times have you been here? 5, 6, 7 times? What did we not do that you should have told us to do?
The wrist check. Oh, I know. I was thinking, I was like, I'm not going to interrupt this beautiful moment between you two to say, actually, guys, what are we all wearing? What's on our wrists?
Sure. Right, okay. Well, Nick, you can ask our new guest of honor what they're wearing.
Okay, so Rob, what have you got on your wrist today?
So I'm wearing the only watch I can remember buying at full retail. I'm wearing a Fears Redcliffe Streamline, which is the watch that I actually purchased from Nick when I met him in my store about 3 years ago. And it was the first time I ever met Nick. And I saw him display his collection to me, like he opened this in this box and he had his whole collection perfectly synchronized, telling the correct time, which I've never seen before. I've never seen anyone show a collection with all of the watches perfectly timed. It was like just very visually, like so detail oriented. I looked at the dial of this Redcliffe Streamline. I don't think I've ever, I think there's some Grand Seiko quartz that I've definitely coveted, but I don't think I've purchased a quartz watch in the last 20 years, but I fell in love with this dial so much and just his presentation so much. I just had to have a Fears. So that's what I'm wearing today.
There's a glowing accolade if ever I heard one.
Well, I was also just remembering because that trip in 2019, I'd started in New York. I then went down to Nashville for a day and a night, then up to Chicago for a day and a night. And then I met you, Rob, the next day in California. And it was the first time I'd become aware of the US having so many different time zones, because every time I'd land in a new city, the first thing I'd have to do is open up the watch case and go through about half a dozen watches, resetting them all to the local time. So I'm glad you noticed
that.
Well,
it because, was worth it. It left quite an impression.
You managed to walk into a guy's shop and sell him a watch pretty much, as he says, at full price. I mean, you can't beat that.
Yeah, that's never happened before or since.
Expert salesmanship. Well, the watches actually do sell themselves. The amount of comments that we get from people, there was even a listener, and I can't remember their name, which is probably a good thing, but they got a special edition release just made for themselves, and they actually sent us some pictures over a while back because they'd heard you on the show before. And obviously when Dave speaks about his custom one of one that somebody liked and asked if it could be a one of two, it just goes to show, hard work and doing the right thing and doing it properly every single time does pay off. Nick, what are you wearing on the wrist?
So it's probably no surprise I'm wearing a Fears as well, but I'm wearing my Fears Brunswick White, which is my personal watch, which I also bought from the company full price. But this was actually the very, very first Brunswick watch ever made. So even though it carries the serial number 13, because I was born on Friday the 13th, so it's my lucky number, it's actually the very first one we built back in 2017. So it's a very important special watch for me. And I thought for today, it'd be the perfect watch to have on my wrist.
Excellent. Well, I will ask myself what I'm wearing today. And in honor of Nick's early beginnings in the watch industry, starting off with a small brand, small British brand that moved to Switzerland, I'm wearing my Rolex Batman GMT Master 2, 2017 edition. This is the watch that I've had the longest. It was my third luxury purchase, the one I kept, and it's not one that will ever be leaving the watch box unless I'm destitute and selling the big issue from a cardboard box, because it's what transposed me from being a mortal man into the watch industry, the community, taking it to Baselworld for the first time in 2017, on to starting the podcast and the journeys and the friends that I've made ever since. So it's something that I am going to treasure pretty much till the end of days, and it's out of its warranty, so might as well just keep it, you know, it's a great watch. So that's what I'm wearing today. I love that little guy. As much as I've got so many other watches in the watch box, I just try my best to get the Batman out whenever I can, but sometimes I do forget. So today, that is what I'm wearing. Since you were last here, which must have been August, September time, I believe, and you were very generous and kind, gave me not only your time to record the show, but you also gave me a gift of a book, which I have been through, and I've actually passed it to a friend to read who's getting into watches now as well, and so far they're pretty taken with it as well. So since then, what's been happening? Bring us up to speed.
Well, quite a lot. I think every year I think, right, you know, we've had a good year, we've done lots of launches, I've, you know, done my best to move the company forward, and then the next year it's like, oh well, let's just take it up a level. Like last year when I saw you, we were just about to celebrate the 175th anniversary of Fizz being founded, and we did that with a massive party at the top of the Shard in London, and I sort of thought, right, you know, that's it, like, you know, we can't really beat that. And that was off the back of a year where we launched a platinum watch and some limited editions, and it was great. And then here I am speaking to you from our new headquarters back in Fizz's historic home city of Bristol. And, you know, I'm here on my own, but I'm surrounded by desks, which are filled with the growing Fizz team. And today we had builders in quoting for building the workshop downstairs with two workbenches. And I think back and I think when I was there in August, I had two part-time employees and that was it. And now the Fizz team is like growing, you know, every month or so. So yeah, quite a lot has taken place, but it's good. It's really good. And, you know, Rob was mentioning about his fantastic new place out in Burlingame. When I went over there a few weeks ago, I was very lucky to be given a tour. And it was, I think I was there on the day when the chandeliers and the light fittings were going up. And it really is an incredible space. I mean, bear in mind, I was there when, you know, walls weren't painted, there wasn't a floor. And already you could see the vision. You could see just how light and airy and just, you know, how vast it is compared to the existing store. So I can attest to, you know, definitely when it's open, if you're going to be in California, make sure you get down to Burlingame and go and pay a visit. So it's already been an exciting start to 2022. But as we're going to be talking about today, it's about to get even more exciting. We've got a few firsts coming up in the next few weeks, which is, And I think it's exciting, but it's always, this is what Rob and I were chatting about last night, is I love a new watch launching. I love it. But even though I've been doing this for nearly 6 years, I can't even off the top of my head count how many watches, you know, I've been there on launch day and seen going out with my family's name on the dial. It never gets easy. Like you still, the night before, you have that worry of, what if people don't like it? And, you know, it's why even now I will on launch day always have on my wrist watch number one as my sort of lucky token, my lucky, you know, make sure it all goes well. And I always go out for breakfast at McDonald's. And they're the two things I've done since day one of restarting the company. And I still do them to this day, because until you get that, you know, that first 24 hours of feedback from people, you know, do people like this? Do people think it's crazy? Do they think it's right for you to be doing such a thing? You are literally putting a bit of yourself out there. And it's not just putting it out there and people can make a comment, especially when it's a family-run business like Topper, like Fizz. There's also the scary idea of actually we are putting our businesses out there as well, you know, to see whether people like of what we want to create, whether we have a great idea and whether people agree with us or not. So yeah, with all that said, it is really exciting the next few weeks. Like, you know, that is definitely the main thing.
You say that, but the last few weeks, the last few months, me and Dave were talking about a purple watch not so long ago. We were talking about the fact that Sam is now doing marketing and assisting you with various endeavors as well. There are all these little moving parts and releases that just keep coming. And they just get better and better. It's not like, oh, there's another watch from Nick. Every single one stands on its own. It's unique. It has attributes that haven't been seen before. But then there's the family resemblance that people love and the collectors want. So it all ties together nicely. And you're just far too humble. That's one thing we have figured out over the past 5 to 7 episodes. You don't like blowing your own trumpets. That's what we're here for. Should we let the cat out of the bag? Might as well talk about what we're here for. And who wants to lead with this one?
Well, I'll lead with what its project code name was, because anyone who follows Fears knows we always have a project code name for any watch we're developing. And the moment we started working on this, I sounding like a crazy Brit was saying, Rob, we've got to have a code name. So when we're talking about this project, no one knows what we're talking about. He was like, oh, okay. What do you think it should be? And so I came up with Project 94010, which is sounds like an absolute mouthful. And trust me, all of our suppliers around Europe hate us because they're like trying to pronounce it in broken German and broken Swiss. But of course, 94010, it's the zip code for Burlingame.
Well, I knew 90210. And right. I had an idea maybe close to that.
So, yeah, starting off with the very, very geeky inside baseball. But yeah, so Project 94010 has a proper name. And that name, Rob, I'll let you do the honors.
I think it sounds better when you do it. So go ahead. It has more gravitas. I just have this silly California accent, and it is a Fears ultimately. So you have to say it, and then I'll talk about what it means.
Right. Okay. Well, so Project 94010 goes by the official name of the Fears Brunswick 40 Topper Edition. So there's quite a lot in that to sort of unpick, but the main thing, obviously, is the Topper Edition, which Rob will go into more detail about. But yeah, when you look at the whole name of the watch, you'll see there's quite a few interesting new things that have gone into this, which is why this is a particularly exciting new addition to the Fears family.
How long has this project been in the works? Because I remember being told about this 2 or 3 years ago.
That's right. I think we met in October 2019. That's when we met for the first time. And that's when I sort of visualized this sort of in my mind, like right when I was looking at his watch box, looking at those 6 perfectly synchronized watches, like as I was buying that Redcliffe, I was already in my mind sort of visualizing an ultimate project, because the joy to me of working with an independent is the ability to totally, you know, bring that independent to do something that they haven't done before, and to bring something, you know, from a specific standpoint, and be able to have back and forth conversations to create dial aspects that, where I look back on the other things that I've done, could be, you know, new and exciting and just improvements on things. So by, I'd say, April of 2020, we were in full design mode. And that's when it really started. So I think that's probably about the time we talked about it. We probably talked about it around, you and I, probably around 2020, when we were in full design mode. But in my head, I started working on it from the day that I met Nick.
And the crazy thing is, I didn't really know about that when I first met Rob. And we'll give a shout out to our mutual friend who on Instagram is watch_diversion, who very kindly, I met him in San Francisco when I first arrived. And I mentioned about this, you know, oh, I might try and get down to Topper. I don't, you know, I might get a taxi. I'm not sure. And he said, oh, no, I'll take an afternoon off work. I will drive you down. I know Rob. This guy very generously took me down and introduced me to Rob. I was there for a couple of hours. We showed the watches, we talked watches. And Watch Diversion was taking me back to my hotel, he suddenly said, oh, you know, are you going to do much sightseeing? And I said, oh, no, sadly not. I'm on the 6 a.m. flight back to New York tomorrow morning. And he said, oh, okay. So he suddenly gave me a 2-hour car ride tour of San Francisco, showing me the Golden Gate Bridge and everything. So,
and this is just an enthusiast from Instagram.
Yeah. This is someone who I'd met through Instagram, who was just so kind and generous.
He's also, at the time, was a Fears owner. And his name is Rick. So his sub name on Instagram is Rick's Watch Diversion. Though if you're following him, it's watch underscore diversion. He's been an incredible supporter of Topper. And he actually is one of the only people on the planet, I think there might be one or two others, that has every one, at least one dial of every Topper limited edition series that's come out. So he's like the perfect, you couldn't ask for a better person to have introduced us. Him and his wife are both really popular among all of at least three different watch groups that I know of. They're just really popular in the Bay Area watch scene. And just, he's like one of the nicest people that I've ever met in this business. And he was nice enough to bring Nick to our store. And
And the crazy thing, I think, is, you know, when you think about 2020, you know, let's not dwell too much on, you know, the big thing that took place. But actually, it really did in a way help this project to sort of get going very quickly, because beginning of 2020, Rob and I emailing, and then we move on to WhatsApp about, you know, yeah, could there be something, maybe explore something. And suddenly, you know, March 2020 hits and, you know, everything is thrown up in the air. And as you know, Ricky, I took a second job. I was doing night shifts at Asda to keep Fears running and keep everything, keep the lights on. But of course, the thing was, when I was getting up at 11:30 at night to have breakfast and get ready for my night shift, who's awake at that time? People in California. And so suddenly I would be finding, you know, there'd be a message from Rob and I'd reply to him and we'd have, you know, audio calls, video calls while I'm getting ready to go to work, talking about things. And so very quickly at that point, we're like, well, let's start moving this project forward. But it meant that rather than there being this big time zone delay and issue, we got so much done in those first few months while I was at Asda, because every morning I was waking up having my, you know, cup of Yorkshire tea and my cereal while chatting with Rob and like going, oh, what about if we change this on the design? Or, oh, I've had some renders done. What do you think of this? And so we were doing all of that. And then I'd be like, right, I've got to run. I've got to go and stack some shelves. And I honestly think it would have been so much slower if there hadn't been that sort of 3 months where we've suddenly found ourselves like aligned on the same time zone. Because that's the thing, you know, this isn't just two businesses coming together. You know, one is, you know, very traditional British, one is very traditional Californian. What this is, you know, it is people from the other side of the world. You know, we speak the same language, but we are, you know, literally the other side of the world from each other. And I think it's been really, for me, fascinating kind of bringing that together in something. But I don't want to spoil all the details because, you know, Rob had been planning this for a while. But I think really interestingly, it was how he was going to, I don't want to say convince me, but, you know, I as you know, Ricky, and as I'm sure a lot of listeners know, I have very strong ideas of, you know, what I do and what I don't like. And I also have a very clear idea of the Fears aesthetic. And as you mentioned earlier, like when we bring out a new watch, it may be very different, but it always is unmistakably a Fears. And so I'm very, very protective of that. And so I think I was very, you know, grateful that Rob kind of, he realized that. And so, you know, through the early days of discussion and realizing this is a collaboration, i.e. this isn't just taking an existing Fears watch and slapping the Topper name on the dial or something, you know, with this, we are doing something really, you know, quite new and special. I was, it was a great experience for me.
So to me, if you were going to talk about like, what is the elevator pitch of this watch and like, what does it mean? Just listening to him talk and realizing, you know, the experience that Nicholas had, both, you know, working for Rolex, working for his own company, the technical chops that he has, the basic elevator pitch concept is, imagine, you know, taking this proper British watch company and ordering a California dial version of an existing watch. But the fact that it's a California dial is also sort of a metaphor for just a more casual and a more sporty and a more rugged watch. And if you look at Fears advertisements from the 30s and 40s, you can see that at the time, their ads show this desire to make things for sportier climates. You'll see the word tropicalized in their 30s and in their 30s and 40s ads. And tropicalized, Nicholas, do you want to talk a little bit about what tropicalized meant to Fears in the 30s and 40s?
Yeah. So, you know, nowadays we talk about water resistance, you know, what's the WR of the watch, you know, 10 bar, 100 meter, you know, but back in the 30s and 40s, a lot of these terms weren't fully formed yet. So people didn't refer to a watch as being water resistant to X number of meters. So the way Fears spoke about it was saying that, you know, these watches are tropicalized, you know, they're designed to work in the tropics or a tropical climate. The idea being humidity, where moisture, water is going to, you know, perspiration is going to enter the watch. And it's a very, I don't know, it's very British. It's very of its time. You know, it's very sort of stiff upper lip. You can imagine some, you know, colonel being out in India with his tropicalized watch on and, you know, a starch collar and going out playing polo or, you know, going out playing cricket in the midday heat. You know, it's, it conjures up these sort of wonderful images before the world became about 100 meter water resistant. You know, and
it's a romanticized version.
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, and this was also the interesting thing because while, you know, early doors, I basically kind of opened the Fears archive to Rob and said, look, you know, have a look at the old adverts, the old watches, like see what elements stand out to you. Because, you know, I spend my entire life looking at this. You know, in fact, next week, our new part-time archivist starts officially working for Fears, who is, you know, cataloging the entire archive. So I'm too close to it, right? You know, I see it too much. And what I love is handing it to someone and opening the door and saying, right, you have a look at it. What jumps out at you? And straight away, there were things within literally hours, Rob was calling me saying, right, I love this. This is a great way of referencing this or a great way of talking about this. And I mean, but one thing I think very early on when Rob first came to me and said, right, I'm thinking about this, like, how cool would it be if a California retailer was to come to you and request a California dial? And I'm like, well, that's great. I love that because it's part of the story. It's part of what a California dial is.
Do you want to explain to the listeners that haven't played along at home, aren't looking at the pictures in the show notes, what a California dial actually is?
Well, I think for that, I'm going to hand over to our resident Californian.
Well, it's a mixture of Arabic and Roman numerals. That's basically in a simple term what it is. And I think it started with Rolex bubble backs. It's been used by Panerai. It's most recently been used on watches like the Nomos Club Campus Edition. It's basically a mixture of Arabic and Romans. The aesthetic of that mixture is good, but it was to me for this watch just as much of a springboard to other things. So this watch, taking a Brunswick and putting a California dial on it would have been nice. And I bet you it would have been popular and we probably could have sold it out in the quantity that we made. But I wanted it to be more of a metaphor for Northern California lifestyle and sportiness. So when you look at this watch, it has a series of firsts for a Fears. It's, as I understand it, the first automatic watch that Fears has done. How long has it been since you've done an automatic watch, Nick?
Since 1976. Yeah. First automatic in about 45 years.
I had no idea that the watches that we've talked about in the show so many times have been manual wind or quartz. No automatics.
No automatics. No, everything up until this moment, since 2016, since I brought the company back, has been either quartz or manual wind.
I had no idea. I wonder how many listeners had no idea either.
It also features a new case. So the Brunswick that you know is a 38 millimeter. So this Brunswick is a 40 millimeter, which is also water resistant to 100 meters, though it doesn't say the water resistance on the watch anywhere. It just says tropicalized. It'll just say the water resistance in the text spreadsheet that comes with the watch. We're doing two 25 piece limited editions of two different colors. One of the reasons I was so excited about this was I feel like his case shape naturally calls for a sportier watch. And when I looked at a Fears for the first time, I asked Nick a question that once he gave me the answer, I just knew 100% I wanted to make this watch. And the question I asked was, when your grandfather or great-grandfather in the 30s started making cushion shaped cases. How mindful was he of the Panerai watches at the time? And the answer that Nick gave is really interesting. So once I heard this answer, I felt confident that there needed to be a sportier fears with a British take on things. So what was your answer, Nick?
Putting me on the spot, remembering what I said 3 years ago. So the first Fears cushion case was in 1924. So we're looking at 12 years before Panerai. And, you know, these were watches that were designed to be worn. They weren't dress watches. They were designed to be actually worn and enjoyed, you know, through an active lifestyle.
So it seemed to me there really was a chance to go back to original DNA and to that if we did it with, you know, making the dials and the finish and as, you know, unique as possible, that there really would be a chance to carry on an existing legacy and make something new. So I was really happy to hear that, you know, this cushion case wasn't derivative. It wasn't a derivative case of, you know, what the Italians were doing at the time.
To link back to the point about, you know, how something is a Fears or not, you know, when Rob first said, you know, let's talk about the case, like, you know, would you be open to making it larger? And I thought, yeah, you know, we can make it larger. We can add a couple of millimeters. That's pretty easy. But as you know, Ricky, I'm not one to just take the easy route. So I was like, no, we're going to just go to a blank sheet of paper and basically redesign the Brunswick as a 40 millimeter. But the way I saw it from the start was this is the slightly sportier older brother of the Brunswick 38. So the Brunswick 38 is the one, you know, on the side of the rugby pitch cheering on his older brother.
Is this a bit like classic Submariner versus rugged contemporary Submariner of the modern day?
Yeah, it's that thing where you can go, oh yeah, look, one's 39 mil and one's 41 mil, but actually it's all about proportion. And that's the thing. So when you hold the Brunswick 40 against the Brunswick 38, they clearly have the same elegant silhouette. They have the same sort of initial resemblance. But actually, when you really start looking at them, they are very different looking watches, you know, and it's all to do with the proportion. You know, yes, the case grew by 2 millimeters. The dial grows by over 3 millimeters. So the bezel proportions are different. And straight away, that means when the watch is on the wrist, it has a very different presence. And that was the thing. I wasn't just, you know, Rob didn't want to just take an existing watch and put a different dial on it. And I didn't want to just take the existing case and then just up it by 2 millimeters by going into Photoshop and dragging it in the corner and making it a little bit bigger. I said, no, we need to look at this. And that's why we ended up going, right, we're going to go automatic. We're going to go 100 meter water resistance. You know, we are going to change. And, you know, it's 100 meter water resistance because as you both know, and some listeners may know, our tagline, which is trademarked, is elegantly understated since 1846. Everyone will hear me going on about the elegance. You know, this watch is very elegant. It's all about the proportions. But I very rarely talk about the understated fact. And what is understated? Well, it's a very British thing, right? You know, it's about, you know, not shouting about things too much. It's about being a bit more reserved. But when it comes to this watch, yes, you know, it's 100 meter water resistant. That is what we are guaranteeing it to. A couple of weeks ago, I was at the workshop and I said, right, we've got one of the cases. And this was actually one of the pre-production cases. So don't worry, Rob, with what I'm about to say. This wasn't one of the cases that's coming out to you in California. And I just said, you know what? Let's see how far we can go. Let's push it. And even after 2 hours in a submerged water tank at 300 meters, there was absolutely not a single indentation, not a leak, not a scrape on anything. And that's with a push-pull crown.
A lot of people don't also understand is how good gasketing can be when you don't have a screw-down crown. Like the fact that, I mean, this watch isn't a screw-down crown, so it's a push-pull crown. So the fact that it could go 300M without a screw-down always amazes me.
I was about to interject and say Rolex say that with the crown open, the fact they've got the twin lock or the trip lock gasketing system, you can get 100 meters water resistant with the crown popped out. When you just said 300 there, I was like, oh, no way.
And this is the thing, you know, the Brunswick 40 is, you know, it's all the subtle little differences. So you've still got the same finishing on one of the models as we have on the Brunswick 38. So you've still got beautiful polishing, beautiful graining. You know, you've still got the curves. It slips under a cuff beautifully. But, you know, the crystal is 50% thicker than the crystal in the Brunswick 38. You know, this case has been, you know, designed to be worn and properly worn. And I think that's the thing. It's not just saying, oh, it looks like it's, you know, a more active lifestyle Fears. Oh, no, this has been built to be a more active lifestyle Fears. That's the thing. You either do it, you know, it has to be the real McCoy, or you go home.
So one of the things that to me is interesting is, so a listener might be thinking, okay, so they had all these back and forth conversations, and like, what were we actually talking about? Like, what was the most discussed part of the design process? And there were really two things. Number one, there's a white dial and a black dial. The white dial is lacquer, and the black dial is, it has like a little bit of a rough texture to it. A white dial, I really wanted it to be like the wettest lacquer we'd ever done. And when you look at that lacquer, I wanted it to be even wetter looking than like a Rolex Explorer 2 Polar. And so I think Nick, again, I felt confident he was the right person to do this, just from every aspect of him in a way, nothing like me. It's so incredibly detail oriented. I just knew that he could do a, you know, work with, you know, the best suppliers to do a process to give this lacquer an incredibly wet look. And it incorporates the color scheme I love, but in a new way. Like the indices are black, which fits the watch better. And he's integrated blue into the hour track. But not so much that heat blue. It's more of a lighter blue. But Nick, can you talk a little bit about the process of the dial and how it's different than the Brunswick that everybody knows? Because that to me is the true joy of the project, is that in addition to a case and an automatic, it's that he invented new process for the, you know, that hadn't appeared in a Fears before.
Well, that's the thing. When you're looking at the watch, you know, at first you glance at it and go, oh yeah, look, it's a Fears. It's a Fears Brunswick White. Great. And then very quickly you realize, oh no, it's a different case. And then you notice the layout. But yeah, this was the thing that, you know, we spoke a lot about, we did the most prototyping on, was that surface finish. And so on the Brunswick White, we have a white lacquer dial. But on the Brunswick 40 Topper Edition with the white dial, it is a very, very different kind of lacquer. And so rather than using lots and lots of layers of just solid white lacquer, hand polishing in between them, you add in also layers of clear lacquer that help to give more depth to the dial. And it's all about the proportions so that it doesn't feel like there's a layer, but it feels like, yeah, it feels like it's wet. You can almost jump into it. And then with the we've been talking about the California layout. This is something quite different from this. This isn't a sandwich dial. This isn't a printed dial. This is a California layout, but done with appliques. And the appliques are, just as the appliques we use on all our other watches, milled to a ridiculous height. I mean, each applique is about double the height of a standard industry applique. Now, a lot of people will be going, hang on a moment, why is this crazy Brit going on for like several minutes about the size of the applied numeral? Well, the reason is, so each numeral is milled out, diamond polished, and then they used a laser to cut away the path for the luminescent to go in. So this is also the first watch since our very first quartz piece that we've used Superluminova. And I was adamant that, you know, if we were going to use loom, we weren't going to have just a light sprinkling of it. You know, if we're doing it, we're doing it properly, which means that we're using the latest released X1 grade of Superluminova. We're using a lot of it, and we're using it, the same supplier is doing the hands and the appliques. That meant that each hand, which was milled in Germany, each applique that was milled in Germany, was sent to the same Swiss supplier to be filled by hand with the Superluminova. It's not printed, it's not injectioned, it's literally applied into that applique by hand. Why? Because the appliques and the hands are diamond polished and then plated in black gold. And that's just too valuable to then just print some loom in there. So you've got probably about 0.3 to 0.35 millimeters of loom in each applique. And this watch, you put it near an open, you know, near a window with the blinds open, and within minutes, it is already glowing, even in daylight. It is incredible. But again, it's that you do it properly. But when you're, you know, wearing this watch on its strap and you're going out for dinner, you look down and it's just, you know, the light in the restaurant will catch those diamond polished appliques and they will sparkle. And what you won't see is the loom, because the loom is ice white. This is a thing that I get, you know, excited about when I wake up in the morning. But when, you know, we were discussing this and Rob was saying, right, you know, what if we did a white dial and a black dial? And I was like, okay, but I didn't like the idea of just doing the same watch in two dial colors, just changing the color, because, well, again, that just feels a bit obvious. That's a bit easy. It was like, no, actually, we want to ensure that both watches have their own personality. And so whereas with the white dial, you've got this liquid white lacquer, the black gold appliques, a case which is polished and brushed. For the black dial, we went the complete other direction. The case is all brushed. The dial has this wonderful texture, which is applied using a textured lacquer, but done with a matte finish. And that means that the texture on each dial, it's not stamped. It's not like a stamped texture. Each dial has a slightly different texture. And then the wonderful thing, and this I will, you know, take my hat off. This was not a design choice that came from me. But while we're going through this, Rob said, what if we were to play with a seconds hand on the black dial? You know, we've already got a watch that's a bit more field watch-esque. You know, it's a brushed case. It's more matte. It's more sort of rugged. Why don't we, you know, really kind of lean into that? And the suggestion, which we've carried right through to the production watch and is absolutely one of my favorite design parts of it, is the bright yellow seconds hand. And having this, the black, the rhodium-plated hands, the brush case, and then this bright yellow seconds hand, which is then just ticking away, sweeping its way around the dial, is, oh, I love it. It's absolutely perfect.
And complemented by yellow on the minute track too. Not exactly the same yellow, so it kind of blends back in.
It's all about making sure that when we're doing this, it still is fierce and it's got lots of little details, but the details don't scream. They are understated, you know. But then it comes to other practical things of, you know, when we were looking at what movement to power it by.
Which movement did you go for?
We've gone for a top grade ETA 2824. So it's the same grade as the chronometer rated ones. We just haven't gone for the chronometer certificate. But two things we've done, which you won't see, but are there. The first one is we've completely removed the date mechanism and also the shadow click. So basically, when you pull the crown out, the watch stops. When the crown's in, you can wind it. So there's no longer a date position and there's literally no date wheel. The workshop have got a box filled with date wheels. So if anyone needs a spare 2824 date wheel, I've got plenty of them going.
Christmas tree decorations.
Exactly. Oh my goodness. They could go in coasters.
Yeah. One of the great things about working with Nick is, like, we've thought about the same things a lot, but because I'm in California and he's in the UK, just the words sometimes are slightly just a little different. Like in California, we call it a phantom click. And I guess you call it a shadow click.
I've heard the term ghost.
Ghost as well.
That's been something that I've cared tremendously about since the first Oris Limited in 2016, which was taking an SW200 and removing it, was removing the setting lever and making sure that that phantom click isn't there. So that is a very important part of Topper design. In that texture, just like the white lacquer, that this is the wettest one we've ever done, is an important part of, you know, three different Topper editions from the past. That texture we did on the Zodiac White Wolf, which was the first larger production Zodiac to sell out, in one of the most popular ones, ZO9208, if any of you feel like looking that up. Working with Nick allows a whole different level of control than any designer I've ever worked with, in the sense of, well, what if we made the texture like 5% rougher? Or what if, I mean, the relationship he has with his suppliers, his attention to detail, his ability to go through drafts of texture to get the result that he wants is unparalleled with any Topper edition that I've done.
And it's something that is very different from, and this is not a watch I would have made just off my own back. And I will be honest, when the very first pieces arrived from the workshop, the pre-production models, I was really apprehensive. I had the box in my office for 3 hours before I could open it, because I thought, at this point, if this isn't good, like if I don't love this, like we're a bit screwed, because, you know, I've got to love this, especially, you know, and that goes back to it being a family business. You know, if you're going to put your family's name on the dial and all this legacy behind it, you gotta love it. And the black dial was the one I was most worried about, because we don't have a black dial in the collection. It's an aesthetic that is not my immediate go-to, you know, brushed cases, you know, much more sort of field watch, much more sort of, you know, a casual appearance. And I don't know, I think it might be my favorite out of the two. I love it because it's the other side of the personality, right? You know, right or wrong, I put a lot of my personality into the watches. And, you know, as you know, Ricky, I think best describe me as champagne and carling. You know, I enjoy the fine things, but I also enjoy just going to the pub and having a pint of carling.
Or a half pint
and something else as well. So, you know, for me, that's what I love, is actually these two watches are almost like the two sides of a personality. It's not just one thing. They're both clearly fears.
It's the Jekyll and Hyde of the Fears Watch Company.
That's what we've just created.
The only problem I see here, the fly in the ointment, as you guys have explained it to me, is when we talk about limited editions, that could be 6,900 or something. That could be 250 or something. You're talking 25 of each iteration.
I think it's really important that, and, you know, we've done, I would say the last few years, we've done some higher quantity limiteds. And I think it's really important to us going forward on all topper editions, that if somebody's going to invest in a piece and get it right away, that they have the confidence that it sells out. And I have a friend, Jason Lim at Helios, and he one time, he said, I will only define success when myself is successful, when people love my watches enough to never sell them. And I think that that's true on one level, but on another level, I want people, when they buy our limiteds, to feel like they can get out of them as fast as they got into them. And so if you're going to do that, it's really important that the quantities be on the lower side, not the higher side.
Well, we've heard stories in the past of people trying to get their hands on Fears watches and how difficult it is, because owners are enthusiasts and collectors and watch lovers, and they don't want to let them go. And there was a story we talked about many years ago in the podcast where somebody managed somehow by hook or by crook to get one, and they were over the moon about it. It just so happened somebody managed to get them it. And when you're talking about such limited quantities here as 25 of, these are going to disappear instantaneously. And we have something to let you guys know as you're listening, because we actually asked these two gentlemen here to switch an embargo around, because we obviously launch our show on a Thursday, not a Friday, and the market dictates Friday is the day of release of new watches. But Nick, do you want to tell exactly what's going on just now?
Well, Friday is usually the day a watch launches. So we've brought this up a day to Thursday the 23rd, so the day this podcast is going out. But it's launching at 9 a.m. Pacific time. So it's being sold only through Topper, not through Fears. So that means that in the UK, 9 a.m. Pacific time is, I believe, 5 p.m. British summer time.
So listeners, as you're driving to work just now listening to this, set an alarm. Ask Siri, ask Alexa, ask Google Assist, whoever it is you deal with, to set an alarm for 1 minute before, so you can get the jump on the Americans to get onto the website and be queued up ready.
I also want to say that this is the only podcast that we're doing relative to this watch, as it is a relatively small production watch. And, you know, Ricky, your show has been incredibly important in growing the tent of enthusiasm in not just Great Britain, but also in the United States. We wanted to make sure that we gave your audience the respect that this was going to be, you know, the only launch discussion that Nick and I were going to have, you know, with you, for the public, for the watch. And so we hope it finds homes that end up loving it, and a lot of those homes we hope will be your audience.
Well, listen, I really appreciate that, and it's something you said to me 2 years ago and you have stuck to your word on that. So I want to thank you for that. And
oh, of course.
Sort of believing in us as well. Right. Whichever one of you wants to jump in first, tell the listeners how they can get a hold of this.
It will be on topperjewelers.com on the front page of our website at 9 o'clock Pacific time, which if, in your release of this podcast will be earlier in the day. And so I'm sure people will listen to it later in the day after. Hopefully it's come and gone. But topperjewelers.com, that's where it'll be.
So you would recommend that people ahead of time log on, register an account, put all their details in.
You don't have to do anything. You can check out as a guest. And, you know, I always feel like people end up looking, you know, silly if, you know, they're like, oh, it'll sell out in 5 minutes. And then 4 days later, it's still there for sale. So who knows, you know, I mean, whether it sells out or it doesn't, I do know this. We did the best we could on this project. Nicholas, tell them about the polishing cloth that we made for the watch. And we have to get you a picture of it.
The cleaning cloth, which is actually made in Glasgow. It's a microfiber cleaning cloth. And we always supply them with every watch we make. But for this project, we wanted to do something a little different. And so I'd said, oh, you know, we can do something. We can include your logo on it. You know, we can keep it pretty simple. And Rob was like, no, I have an idea. Have you ever watched Indiana Jones?
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
And there is a wonderful scenes where it's the map with the plane flying from place to place. And I was like, okay, I see where this could be. Right, that's enough. Leave that with me for the moment. And so we went away and had a play. And our in-house watch designer, he is a fantastic illustrator, hand illustrator. And he went away and by hand did this beautiful illustration of a globe with this wonderful Bristol Britannia aircraft flying from Bristol to Burlingame around the world and done in the same style as the Indiana Jones. And it was just, this is the thing also I just love it, is when talking with the designer and we're talking about like what the aircraft should be. And we're like, no, it can't be a Douglas DC-3. You know, that's too obvious. We've got to go for a Bristol made aircraft. So we didn't go for Concorde. We decided to go for a Bristol Britannia in the BOAC livery as it's flying its way across transatlantic. And it's just, it's a charming little thing that, you know, hopefully people will enjoy it and appreciate it. But it's it's bringing an idea from California and then turning into a reality in Bristol.
Many years in the making. Super happy to have you guys on the show today. I don't know how these things will go ahead of time. I, like Nick, the day before release, the morning of release, I sometimes worry how things are going to go over the next 60 minutes. And before we recorded this, haven't really interfaced much with Rob. He's a busy guy. Nick's been busy. I've not seen him for maybe 3/4 of a year. But here we are, 1 hour down, another episode in the can, and it has been fantastic. Thank you both for coming on and sharing this launch with our listeners and giving us the kudos factor of being the first and only podcast to chat about this new release, even though it is nothing to do with us. That just makes it all the more sweeter. Thank you very much for coming on. Thanks for listening. As you heard it there, go to topperjewelers.com to check that out. Also, be sure to look through our show notes because there'll be lots of pictures. I'm sure we'll get some sneaky shots of the polishing cloth and various other things as well. So behind the scenes information along with all the images that you want to see. And be sure to give these guys a follow on Instagram. Rob, what's your Instagram handle?
Well, the store, which is most important, is Topper Jewelers. I have a personal Instagram that's also mainly just about my family, my wife and my kids, as much as it is about watches. It's Rob Kaplan_Topper. But Topper Jewelers is the one a watch lover would want to follow.
And for the three people that listen to the show that don't already follow you, Nick.
So on Instagram, it's at Fierce Watches. And then for myself, which is a daily behind the scenes of running a watch company, it's my name, just at Nicholas Bowman Scargill. Give a follow. I reply to every message. I get about 50 a day, but I do reply to everyone. So come and say hi and we'll have a chat on my DMs.
Excellent. Well, thank you guys for joining us and thank you for listening. Wow, that's the end of a show and I'm absolutely buzzing because I can't wait for this episode to drop in a few days' time. So thank you for listening and we'll catch you guys again soon.
Goodbye.